Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
Kyle Clifford has been charged with the murders of Carol Louise and Hannah Hunt. The charges relate to the deaths of the wife and two daughters of BBC racing commentator John Hunt in a crossbow attack in their Hertfordshire home in July. Donald Trump praised the Secret Service for doing an excellent job after he was the target of what the FBI said appears to be an attempted assassination. The former president spoke publicly for the first time in a social media event hosted by X. Due to climate change, 1.9 million people in the UK currently live in areas at significant risk of flooding. Environmental consultant GeoSmart is urging the government to recognise the risks. Director Mark Fermer explains more.
We're asking that DEFRA arranges for an urgent review. There's also, I think, a need for the catchment regulator, the Environment Agency and its sister bodies in the other UK countries to look at this on a catchment basis.
And music mogul Sean Diddy Combs has been arrested in New York. From Radio News Hub, I'm Grace McIntosh.
Sam used to worry about rising energy prices, but not since fixing his tariff. Instead of spending hours looking for deals, he just relaxes in the shower. Singing, rather badly. Because with a British Gas fixed tariff, you're protected against future price rises. And if we release a cheaper fixed tariff, you can switch to it, absolutely free. Search British Gas tariffs. Eligibility and T's and C's apply.
Coming up, Africa in Focus.
Moving to the UK can be rather overwhelming, but moving your money doesn't have to be. With HSBC Global Money, you can convert, send, or spend multiple currencies around the world whenever you want with no HSBC fees. So you'll be right as rain, as they say in the UK. Search HSBC Global Money. HSBC UK. Opening up a world of opportunity. Available to HSBC UK customers with an eligible current account and the mobile banking app. Non-HSBC fees may apply.
Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
Africa in Focus.
Colorful.
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 Genius.
Colorful.
Colorful. Colorful Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, or even good evening, depending on the time zone that you are connecting to us from. Welcome to Africa in Focus. I'm your host, Julius Baluto. And we carry on with Kane Prize for African Writing series, basically, which kicked off not long ago, and we are on that. Today, we are privileged, and we'll be hosting Uche Okonkwo. Uche, welcome to Africa in Focus.
Thank you very much.
And I hope I said your second name correctly.
Yeah,
in my Nigerian spirit.
Yeah, you did a good job.
Yeah, nice to have you. And to all readers, basically, if you start by introducing yourself, that would be great so that they hear from you instead of me telling them about you and you are here with me.
Okay. So my name is Uche Okonkwo. I am a writer of fiction, mostly short stories. I'm from Nigeria. Currently, I'm studying for a PhD in creative writing at University of Nebraska, Lincoln. I started writing from a pretty young age. A Kind of Madness is my first book. It's a collection of short stories about Nigerians and their experience living in Nigeria, existing in the world. And it came out in April of this year.
Wow. Tell us a bit more about your first writing, your first book, because it's, I quite like the title. I don't know what to say about it, but somehow I feel like I can it resonates with me because ways of our cultures and the happenings on the ground in Africa sometimes may be fitting to that title, but I'm not, just let me know. Choice of title Inspiration.
Okay, so the title, so I didn't have a title for this book for a long time because it's a short story collection, and the different stories in the book, some of them were written like so many years ago. And so the process of putting together the short story collection was not like very deliberate. So I've been writing short stories for a long time, and it got to a point where I had enough stories to make a collection. And so then the process was like putting it together and then trying to reading the whole thing as a manuscript and trying to see what are the things that are like connecting each of the stories, how are the stories talking to each other. And so when I was thinking of how to approach the title for the book, I first started by looking at titles of the individual stories in the collection. But I didn't like any of the individual titles enough to make it like the title of the book. And so I started reading through the stories, looking for like phrases or images from the stories that felt like they could resonate with the whole book. And so a kind of madness came from the very first story in the collection, which is called Mouillé Belgium. And it's from a scene where a mother and a daughter, towards the end of the story, are kind of evaluating their situation. And the daughter has come to a new like kind of understanding. And then she's looking at her mother, who doesn't seem to be processing their experience in the same way. Her mother is still kind of holding on to like her old like way of thinking in a way. And so the daughter is like, like this kind of stubbornness or this approach to life is like a kind of madness. And so that's where it came from, because I felt like even though the stories are not all about like madness in a literal sense, I felt like all the stories are about like flawed thinking, like flawed mindsets, like maybe not the best way to approach the world. And so that's where the title A Kind of Madness came from.
It makes a lot of sense, because that's what without you saying, I could in a different way figure out and see the stubbornness of sometimes our ways, and without giving room for any new thinking, and you soldier on with life, learn to be converted. Yeah. That kind of feeling, you know, I get it, and it's amazing. So therefore, wow. Away from the intro, and welcome to Kane Prize for Africa Writing. Congratulations for being a nominee, and perhaps how does that make you feel soldiering on me, though, that you've been dealing with?
I'm very excited about it. I mean, I've known about Kane Prize for since when I was young. I mean, if you're involved in writing in Africa, you know about the Kane Prize. You know, I've seen some of my favorite writers get nominated for the Kane Prize. And for the longest time, I've been wishing and wanting to get on the short list. So it's such an incredible honor. And I was very excited about it. Like the day I got the email about it, I was in DC trying to renew my Nigerian passport. And so it was such a hectic day, but like I got the email and I was so excited, and I was just like, oh my God, I can't even believe it. So yeah, I'm very happy to be on the short list. And a lot of my friends, like three people on the two other people on the short list are my good friends.
Wow.
Yeah, it was such a surreal experience to all be on the short list together. So it's really great. Yeah.
No, it's good news. I think it's a blessing that comes. And in Africa, we say double double. I don't know. I don't know whether you've ever heard that before.
Sorry, what language is that?
Double double, blessing. Yeah. No, it's great. It's great. And also good to see your hard work, you know, because it just doesn't come from nowhere. you worked on it and you gave it your best shot and the rewards come. So let's talk about now your work. What informs your writing? So sometimes, like, if I was to see myself in somewhere like Lagos and I start to write something, I'll start with the yellow color because there's a lot of vehicles which are yellow in color. So what informs your writing?
Yeah, I would say it's, broadly speaking, like life experiences. I'm glad that you mentioned Lagos because I grew up in Lagos. I lived in Lagos all my life, and you mentioned yellow, and that makes me remember like the Danfo buses. And there was a time I had a blog a few years back where I used to write about like experiences, and I had a thing called like Danfo Chronicles where I would write about my experiences in different like Danfo buses every day, like on my way to work, that kind of thing. But yeah, I would say life experiences for sure, both good and bad. Experiences from childhood are like a major one too. A lot of my stories are about child characters, and so I'm constantly like thinking about my own childhood, like growing up in the 90s. Things are so different now, but I feel like I'm constantly writing about how it was growing up in the 90s in Lagos. And I think with growing older, some of the things I'm starting to write about are like a little different. I'm slowly starting to like try to write about like the immigrant experience moving to a different country. But I find that for the most part, like my imagination still lives in Nigeria. Like that's still where a lot of my inspiration comes from. Growing up in Lagos in Nigeria has been like a huge source of like my writing inspiration.
Yeah. Oh no, that's great. That's great. And when you think about growing up in Lagos or Nigeria, and you know, you see all these things happening, that's probably events within politics, maybe do they bear to you, or it's just like a lot more cultural experiences that inspire you, or you don't choose any, you go for maybe specific types of events?
Yeah, I feel like I tend to focus more on like the things that are like personal. So I write, a lot of my stories are like about families and like friendships and those kinds of things. So in general, I would say that the broader political landscape and experience comes into it in a way, but it's not like the major focus of the stories. I don't feel like I'm the kind of writer who does like those kinds of like, I don't know how to put it, like the bigger themes. Like I don't approach them like directly. So I usually like approach them through like the smaller setting of a family, or the relationship between two friends, or the relationship between like co-workers, that kind of thing. So using the micro experience to talk about like the bigger things in a less direct way.
Great. And how's the journey been? You see, sometimes in life we see people at the top of the mountain and to use a figure of speech, but sometimes other people are like, I can get there, you know, and we look at success, but we don't look at the process of success. Has it been an easygoing one for you, or you had to surmount some challenges here and there?
I think there are always challenges. Like with writing, I don't know if I can think of like an author who has had it like easy. I think people face different levels of challenges. For me, I don't know. I feel like there's been hard work, but there's also been like luck in a way. I can't think of my writing without first thinking of like the family that I came from. I think that's like a big part of it, because both of my parents studied English in school. And so I grew up in a house that had like lots of books. So I was reading my parents' books from a young age. And I think that had that played a role in me wanting to write. And then I had a family that was like supportive of that, you know. So there's that aspect as well. I've also had like some good opportunities too. Like I was able to do a master's in creative writing and an MFA. And through that process, you build a community, like a support network that like supports you and champions your work. Some of the things that happen, you kind of have to like put yourself out there, right? So there's always a risk in like sending out your work. There's always a risk of rejection. Like every writer out there has experienced rejection. There's also like, for me, the process of finding an agent. Different writers have different stories about that. But for me, I found like a database online somewhere. I think this was back in 2016. And I started like sending out cold emails to all these agents, right? Like I think I was sending out like 10 at a time. And of course, most of them were like rejections, but then I found the one that was like an acceptance. So it's a mix of like some things are beyond your control, some things are luck, but there's also an element of work to it and putting in effort. I wouldn't say it's been easy or difficult. I don't know. It just feels like it's been like a normal process of life, like ups and downs, some good luck, some rejection.
This is Colorful Radio. Colorful
Radio.
Colorful Radio.
Yeah, great. I guess that's life, and I have to congratulate you for your resilience, because sometimes when people, like especially you, encounter one rejection, sometimes people are like quick to give up and they're like, this is not for me. But did you have to get support from friends, family, or what was the reaction? Sometimes I've come across situations whereby if you want to be a comedian, your parents are like, I took you to school to become an engineer or a lawyer. If you say you want to be a writer, some people are like, look for a day job. I mean, these are reactions. You know our African families, eh? Yeah. There must be a lawyer in this family, yeah?
An engineer. My parents are not really like that. So there are five children in my family, so there's like, you know, like there's enough to go around. So the thing with that is that, yes, of course, my parents were like worried about the whole writing thing, and just being an artist is very unstable. It's unpredictable. But like, I've always had a day job. So even when I first started writing, I was working at Kachifo Limited, like Farafina Books. I worked there for many years on and off. So I've always had a day job and doing writing on the side. But there was a time when my mom was like very worried about like me and my future, because like even having a day job at a place like Kachifo Limited and publishing in general, especially somewhere like Nigeria, you're not going to make a lot of money. And so there was concern about like, how are you going to take care of yourself on this kind of salary? And so there was a time when my mom was like really trying to get me into like different fields where I could potentially make more money and like do writing on the side. I mean, I see the wisdom there too, but like I just at that time of my life, I just wasn't interested in doing anything else, so I didn't really follow that path. But yeah, I would say my family has been generally supportive, you know, in spite of the worries that they sometimes have about the life of an artist. It's been mixed, but for the most part, been supportive. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's great. It's good to have a support base, because some of the dreams we've pursued, sometimes people don't understand them and they can't see them. And without that, it's like, wow, they are like always bullying you to look the other side. Well, we want to see some salary at the end of the month. So it's good to have a good family support base.
Yeah, it's also understandable because you need money to live, unfortunately.
Yeah. It's true, though. It's true.
To find a balance.
Yeah, whether we like it or not, that's very correct as well. Even ourselves, we should know that, isn't it? Because bills have to be paid. There will be, you can't tell, perhaps, for example, you can't tell your landlord, wait until I get an agent and my book gets published.
Nobody wants to hear that.
Oh, you see, next will be a big lock on your door. So anyways, people come from different situations and all that. But yeah, that's great. That's great. So how far has it been? How far did you get into studying what you're doing, your writing, or are you still doing that, studying and all that?
I'm still a student at the moment. I'm doing the PhD right now. I'm in my fourth year. It's a 5-year program, and I'm in my fourth year, so close to being done.
You're almost done.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then let's talk about your writing and the impact to those around you. Have you noted any? Have you received any feedback to people who have read your work and all that?
Yes, I received feedback. So there have been some reviews of my work, and I appreciate reviews, but I try not to read them. When I do read them, I like skim, or like if there's like highlights, I read the highlights. So the reviews have been mostly positive. I have also like done like readings, events where like I get to talk to people after, and a few people have commented, particularly about animals, which is the Cain Price story. I've had a few people talk about how they had similar experiences with like, oh, there was this chicken, oh, there was this goat in my house. I didn't know it was going to be food. Yeah, that kind of thing. So those experiences have been very, very great. I've had people talk about how they find my work funny, which is nice, because I don't think of myself as a funny person. Apparently there's like humor in my writing, which is something I appreciate, because I enjoy reading stories that are funny as well. It's been good. Positive feedback from people.
Oh, that is great. That is great, Uche. You know, you're right. You cannot judge yourself. Sometimes we never know. It's other people who tell us how they see us, you know. Yeah. And some years back when I was into screen acting and screenwriting, that was back in Kenya. I'll meet with people on the street, and if I was doing the comedy on TV, the first thing they would tell us, make us laugh. And I'm like, I used to find that very funny, and I would just tell them, just laugh. So people react in very different ways. Yeah. And you can never tell, like, yeah, no one will tell until you speak. The moment you speak is when people will tell you, all right, we found that, this and that and that and that. But it's great. It's great. It's great experience all the time, you know. So therefore, in terms of where you are now and the work that you have, and of course, let's talk about the one subject to the nomination and the Cain Prize for Africa Writing.
Sorry, can you repeat that?
No, I meant like we can talk a bit more about the work that has been nominated, you know, the subject for the nomination. Can you talk about that a little bit as well?
Okay, so the story that was shortlisted for the Kane Prize is called Animals. It's a story that is about a chicken, but it's not really about a chicken. So in this story, the mother comes home. There's a family of a father, a mother, and two children, a boy of about 7 and a girl who's like a teenager. So one day the mother comes home with a live chicken, and this is the first time that she's ever brought a live chicken home. And so it becomes this whole process of like each member of the family kind of has something that they want, and then the chicken becomes an unwitting player in the family dynamic. So for the youngest child, the boy, he gets very attached to the chicken and starts to treat it like a pet. Because he's like, oh, if I give the chicken a name and like treat it like a part of the family, maybe my mom won't kill it and use it as food. For the mother, so between the mother and the father, there becomes this whole thing of like, oh, the gender dynamic in the family, like who's supposed to kill a chicken? Neither one of them wants to do it. There's also some like sexual tension that's going on between the husband and the wife, and the chicken becomes a part of it in a weird way. And then for the youngest daughter, she's trying to get like a video that will go viral featuring the chicken. And so the whole story is just about how that whole conflict plays out.
I quite like that. And yeah, who doesn't want things to trend? They're living in the era of TikTok. but wow, the poor chicken, subject to all the interpretation. So no, it's quite interesting, I tell you. And I'm sure that conflict between the characters must be amazing, because I've seen jokes about chicken, especially you see towards Christmas in many countries, chicken wants to go and into the forest and hide, especially the turkeys and on TikTok you see these funny things about chicken, you know, like if they pass near KFC you start to talk about how they need to hide. And actually, a very funny observation, if you live in big cities like London, right, and never go to the farms, you only see dead chicken in supermarket. Not live ones.
Yeah.
For that, you have to go to the countryside.
Colorful radio.
Colorful
radio.
So it's amazing. And I like the way the twist between all these characters plays out. But again, congrats for that. So what do you think, maybe, or rather, of course, this is happening now, but where you are now, it's what form of other writing maybe you may venture into? I'm not talking about to preempt anything that you are planning, or you don't need to talk about any ideas you have for writing either. But I'm talking about the themes, because sometimes you can pursue different themes.
I feel like in terms of themes, I'm kind of writing about the same things. I'm still writing about like children in like unsafe or perilous situations. I'm writing about relationships between fiancés. I'm also writing about like immigrant stuff, like the experience of coming to like a different country and trying to find a place for yourself, that kind of thing. I'm writing about women's lives still. that pregnancy, childbirth, that kind of thing, I'm hoping to write about. But yeah, those are some of the things that I'm exploring in the future or yeah, currently.
They're powerful themes. They are powerful themes and extremely, some of them extremely controversial as well. And in terms of the plight of people who leave their country to go and live in other countries as well, I find that very interesting, and it's a theme to pursue. And you know, Africa, there's a lot happening, quite a lot happening. There are times whereby in some countries, of course, like Eritrea, people getting kidnapped and trafficked through Sudan all the way to Egypt, into Sinai area, and they'll just disappear from there. If you pursue that, because I've covered that, those stories about kidnaps, it just, when you listen to what's going on, you're like, is this really happening? Is this Africa? So I don't know, when you see what's going on, what's your opinion, for example, when you see a lot of youths having to leave Africa to venture out into other countries for a better opportunity?
I mean, I think it's normal. Like, people have always moved. People will always continue to move. But, of course, it becomes, like, more challenging. You know, there's a lot of xenophobia. There's a lot of racism that comes into some of these conversations. But, yeah, I'm also very aware that, like, some of the things that people, some of the reasons that people are leaving their countries are, like, very serious reasons. I feel like most people don't want to leave the place that they call home. Who was it? There's this poet, I think, I forget how she puts it exactly, like something like the only, like, people only leave home when, like, home is the mouth of the oh, I forget the quote. It's a very good quote. But it's basically trying to say that, like, people, if people are leaving, it's like for, yeah, thank you, Wassan Shire. I forget exactly what it was, but I really love that quote of hers, where home is the mouth of something, I don't remember. But yeah, people leave for all kinds of reasons, and we're very aware that, like, there's a lot of insecurity. Sometimes it's like environmental issues with climate change. So yeah, I mean, I'm very sympathetic to people who have to leave or who leave home. I mean, I myself am in that process as well. So yeah, it's a difficult thing.
Indeed. There are people like myself. I just wanted to leave home, and having worked and, you know, having worked definitely, and I, to the highest of my liking, I wanted to get something new. And then, but my living was pretty much organized. But even as much as it was organized, I found myself in a country where I didn't have a friend. I didn't know anyone I knew. I would desperately, the day after, start to make phone calls of my friends, or numbers of my friends on the phone, desperately hoping they are going to answer, but they didn't. And it's when it dawned on me, I'm in a forest alone. To use figure of speech, right? and therefore, all youths, when you see them leaving in situations that is not organized, that, like, I can see you're leaving home to go into the mouth of the sharks in the sea, because you're jumping on a rickety boat which is likely to capsize. But the moment you're making that decision, I think at the moment, that particular moment, you're desperate and you want to just leave. So when we are writing, what comes in our minds about the plight of those people? What comes in our mind about the reasons that make people live in our countries?
Yeah, so the story that I'm writing about something like this is still like a work in progress. But in this situation, and you talk about how your living was organized, but it was still difficult. So the character that I'm writing about, their living was also like organized in that sense, like it was planned and it was like, but yeah, they get to this new place and now they have to figure out a way to stay, because their living was, yeah, it was not like not a permanent situation. So I feel like there are so many different stories about like immigration and the immigrant experience. There are some that are a lot more traumatic than others. But for me, I try to write something that resonates with me and like with what I have gone through. Just so that I can write what I know and make it sound true and make it feel true. But yeah. But there are so many different ways that people live. Some of it can be so difficult and like traumatic. And all of those stories are valid. But the story I'm writing is going to be more of like someone who leaves their country legally and that they're trying to find a way to stay in the new country that they've gone to. And so there are all these hurdles. There are things that you do that end up being like, or things that this character does that ends up being like unethical or like blurring the lines of like criminal behavior. So those kinds of things that are more a little bit more subtle. But yeah, that's how I'm approaching this particular story that I'm working on.
Well, recent protests in Kenya by the Gen Zs. If you ever watch that, these guys were, they had run out of fear, and just because of what they were going through. Now, we saw them while the president was promising them that they're going to fly out of the country to work in foreign countries. The government was trying to arrange that for them. These youths came and said, we don't want to leave our country to face racism abroad. We want to work in our country. We want those jobs here at home. And when you look into that, it's totally diametrically opposed to a lot of other countries. Some of them are like, youths are like, oh, I really want to go to these big cities around the world, you know, and I would love to walk away from my country. So this narrative coming from the youths, we found it very interesting. Like, we don't want any jobs abroad. We want to work at home. So do you think people really want to leave home, or they want to just stay at home?
I feel like if home is working for people want to stay. Like, I know so many people who have left Nigeria. Like, so many of my friends are leaving, even some family members are leaving, and it was never an easy decision. Like, people like the place that they're from. They want to have those comforts of home. They want to have their family close by. I think that if things were working in a way that made people's lives like viable, in a way that they could see a future for themselves, a future that looks promising, you know, I think people would want to stay. You know, like, who wants to come to this, like, to another country and be so lonely and homesick all the time? Like, it takes so much time even just to adjust to being in a new place. And then if you don't have a support system and a support network, it's really, really difficult. Even if you're able to go there legally, it's still really hard. Well, yeah, I think I can understand why those Kenyan youths were like, no, we want to stay here. We want the jobs to be here. Yeah, that makes sense.
Colorful,
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 colorful, colorful radio. Colorful,
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 genius.
Colorful, 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 colorful radio.
Yeah, they said make our home better. You want to stay at home. Yeah. Well, don't remind me my first winter time, and all I could see were foxes and squirrels that were shivering, and I'm like, African squirrels are warmer. And then I could console myself, like, at least it's something that's familiar. I've seen this one in Africa. So it's writing and exploring these themes is quite something. It's quite something. But then again, from Kenya, we had all these Gen Z's protests being copied in Nigeria. So as a writer, when you see all this happening around you, politically, bad governance, corruption, dictatorship. Of course, when we talk about Nigeria, Nigeria is the home of Ken Saro-Wiwa. Do you remember the Ogoni plight of the Ogoni people, the environmental damage by the superpowers? And so all these things, when you see them happening as a young writer, what comes in your mind? Do you get tempted sometimes to say, one day I'll say that govern well through writing?
No, not really. I don't think I'm that kind of writer. So, like, again, if I'm going to try to tackle some of those things, I would want to dramatize it through like a smaller like context. Like, so if I were to do something like that, maybe I would focus on like a family where they are suffering the effects of like the bad governance from like way up, but I would want to show the effect on like an ordinary person, so that even though we're doing that, we're doing the critique of this is what the government's policies, this is how it affects a person on the ground, but we're doing it in a way where it's not like didactic, like the government is bad. Of course, we know that the government is bad, but like we want to say it in a way that is more digestible, you know, in a way that makes more of an impact. But yeah, I feel like writers who do like nonfiction, like journalists, those kinds of writers, maybe they tackle those kinds of themes more head on. But yeah, and also some fiction writers too, but I just feel like my style is to kind of go at it from like a different angle. Yeah.
Yep, so angles are valid, and key thing is communicating message, which I quite respect. And yeah, sometimes when you are head on so much, there are two things that happen. You either attract trouble, or you are permanently denied your freedom of expression. So
yeah,
this is what happens in some countries, not just Africa, in many countries that has always been the case. But my mom used to say, when you call yourself a man because you want to show you are victorious, remember that a true man is the one who lives to fight another day. So yeah, so we don't want to die the first day. Right then. So in relation to other writers and other creative work, what has been your inspiration?
My inspiration for other creative work?
Yeah, like your apprentices, those who are there before you.
Oh, right. Okay.
Any of them inspired you?
Oh, yes. Chimamanda Adichie, I really enjoy her work. Leslie Nneka Arima is a short story writer from Nigeria, and I think she has won the Kane Prize before, or she has been shortlisted, one or the other. But yeah, I love her short stories. Who else? Oh, Jennifer Makumbi. Oh, I love Jennifer
Okay.
Makumbi's work so much. Yeah, Jennifer Makumbi. I think she's like, her writing is so funny, and like I love how she writes these huge, massive stories, like these huge novels that cover like multiple generations. I don't know how she does it, but I enjoy it so much. Oh, Leslie was shortlisted 3 times and won once. Can you imagine? What a
Wow,
legend.
wow, wow, that's
Yeah,
good.
so yeah,
Yeah,
she's amazing.
that's
So
good.
yeah.
But Chimamanda is very there at the front. He's fearless.
Yes.
Yeah,
Yeah.
you tell it as it is. And I quite like our work as well.
Okay.
Oh no, that's great. You know what? What you're doing also, you're inspiring the future generation. So you're doing great work and creating a legacy for yourself. So any particular changes in the industry that you may be worried about?
No, not particularly. I think something that I think is good, like I'm seeing a lot of work out of coming out of Africa and Nigeria recently that's like new and exploring like new things. So that's very exciting. I don't know. So the whole thing is like AI, like AI and like the ChatGPTs of the world. That I feel like that's still like an unfolding situation. We don't know like what's going to happen with that kind of technology, and so there are concerns about like how our work is being used to train like these AIs. So that's a thing of concern, but I want to believe that like whatever happens with that kind of technology, like there will always be a place for like for artists and writers. Maybe certain things will change, and we don't know how things will change, but I'm hopeful that there will always be like a demand for like artistic expression. Yeah, so yeah, those are some things that are new and interesting.
Okay, what would be your word for as aspiring writers, those who are like, I can do what I've seen Uche Okonkwo do. They want to be you.
Everybody will be themselves, and that's the best thing. I would say try if you can try to build a community of like other writers, because I think that's something that's like very valuable. That's one thing I've gained from like going to school for writing. I mean, you don't have to go to school for writing, but if you can find a way to build like a small group or like a small community of writers where you support each other, where you read each other's work and critique each other's work, not from a place of wanting to tear it down, but from a place of wanting to build each other up and support each other, I think that's very, very useful and very important. Because writing is hard, the publishing industry is hard, so you'll need people. Try to build your community and like support each other, learn from each other, and yeah, that will help to go a long way.
Okay, thanks. Thanks a lot. That's very valuable. And you know what? Thank you for your time as well. And to our listeners, don't go away. Stay tuned for more programs coming to you on Colorful Radio. So Uche, so much. Thank you so much for being with us. And we haven't had the last of you. We are coming again. We want to keep you talking.
Thank you for having me.
Remember, we don't stop until the music stops. And the music never stops on Colorful Radio. Remember that.
Hey, baby. Tonight. It's Friday night, and baby, leave all your worries behind. You don't have to worry about a damn thing. It's time to have a good time. Get yourself together, we're going out tonight. Put on that little dress I like, and I'll be there and say about an hour. So baby, get yourself right.
Oh. second to see, cause we ain't get no sleep. Gonna turn you to my favorite love song. Play it on a weekend. We can drive all night. In your face, I cannot see. Cause we ain't get no sleep. Gonna turn you to my favorite love song. Play it on a weekend. We can drive all night. In your face, I cannot see. Cause we ain't get no sleep. Cause you turned into my favorite love.
The sun hot. The sun hot. Man in the long mutt. Then they say where they pass, I'm the top, me man them. They say Emma still see they on the way they walk. I say party baby mona, nobody game lock. The way me man they look at me, I no see them shock. Like Emma see now come game go lock. The body bad tell them we chop you one block. But too long shot, me man them this gone. Me man them say this thing no come up and fun. But let them guy forget small, but them pockets. But the way them got a phone so can they take. A front for on a concept, then they take them. Them really big fans, now they no more for make them. So one bad man, me they make it say now waiting. Why me for the top so to me shoulder and the cacking? He say in fact, could I give me button? Yeah, I say it, you back could I give you button? He say why me for the top so let that other party picking. He know they take that thing, that other party picking. I say if you want, be black party picking. Me na original, salon bobo digging. The money no lock me, ain't take take. For the city people they suffer, they dance party picking. So wall it, along the line. The sister them pop up and the whole line. The right when they fed for they on the line. The brothers and they involve bank line. Somebody crash me, say, fine, yeah, they around. And I say, correct, oh, fine, molly, I. We are go tell pa, we nice sons and daughters. Tell pa, say, people and they suffer. Tell pa, say, system hard water. Tell pa, we were managing the bandy gutter. Maybe we better, we got bread, we no get butter. But the majority no get bread before I say butter. Una yonu, now I wait for us. Tell we don't land kids, when we don't eat. Angry, they kill we, now let them, now I pinch, but the pinch and give we. Angry man, no get choice. No man, no say, angry man, no get voice. Get me, let them go buy for your toys. Now so they enter small, small boys. Small boys, now they sabi cause noise. Small boys, now they sabi rejoice. And now the system is for the smartest boys. Hiding the wolf in the sheep, these guys. Every day, I they call it these guys. Man, not to God, now only God wise. But man, we been the battle. Link, now they corner one, then they go to. Then say, I don't know how long we go dead from this life. Elected or selected,